You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Those of you familiar with my show know that I'm very passionate about women's health, but I'm also passionate about everyone taking care of themselves, looking out for your own health. One of the reasons I got involved in breast cancer many, many years ago, actually in about 1999, was as a stand-up comic, I realized that I would stand on stage and try to talk about breasts and get a weird reaction from the crowd. And I snapped one night in Cleveland, Ohio, because I was trying to talk about how women use their breasts, whether it's in advertising and men value us for our boobs. And this guy kept yelling at me and I snapped and I started talking about breast cancer that I had. My great aunt Bernice was diagnosed with breast cancer in the 1970s. She went on to have a double mastectomy. She also was a fashion runway model for the American Cancer Association because she was very proud of herself for surviving. And she was very proud to be an example to other women that they could survive. Many of us recognize breast cancer as strictly a women's disease, but we know from things that we've read, and we've talked about this on the show before, but there are men who are diagnosed with breast cancer, and on the line with us is Dr. Oliver Bogler. I got it stuck in my head, Craig. I'm so sorry, doctor. How do I pronounce your last name? I'll just ask you because I've heard it several ways now.
Bogler.
I appreciate your time tonight, and I've read this this piece online about your journey, about your experience, and you yourself are a doctor and who has gone through this incredible journey. Tell us a little bit about your background in medicine.
Sure. I'm a researcher. I'm a cancer biologist, so I work at MD Anderson Cancer Center, but I'm not a physician who sees patients. I'm a guy in the lab who tries to understand how cancer works.
So you've studied the way the cancer cells mutate, what feeds them, that kind of research?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I spent my career working on brain tumors, not breast cancer, but, you know, that was a mistake, obviously.
Well, no, but I mean, you know, we all follow the path that we're driven to. Tell us, so you discovered a lump, and is that how this came about, your own diagnosis or finding out that you yourself had breast cancer?
Yeah, it's a pretty typical story. It was about 3 years ago, and I felt a lump, and, you know, like a lot of guys, I kind of ignored it for a while. You know, the other part of my story is that my wife, Irene, she had been diagnosed and gone through treatment for breast cancer herself about 5 years before me. So the time that I felt my lump, I just couldn't imagine that the same disease would strike twice in the same family. So I kind of pushed it aside for a few months, but eventually decided it was time to go see a doctor.
That's one of those moments where the universe seems both random and specific, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, I just couldn't imagine the conversation over breakfast saying, you know, hi, honey, I think, you know, I have the same thing you have. So that was just too weird, but it turned out to be the case.
But were you at the time familiar that this was possible? Because the percentages are remarkably small. It's about 1%. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, I was aware that it was possible, but I was, you know, like a lot of people going online and trying to find evidence that it, you know, couldn't possibly be the case. My lump kind of hurt a little bit when you moved it around, and some days it felt bigger, other days it felt smaller. So all these things, you know, are a little bit unusual. But yeah, I mean, you tell yourself stories until you really do the right thing, which, you know, I should have done it sooner.
I want to lock into a moment where I just had a research, a cancer biologist tell me that he also Googled his symptoms online. Is that what you just told us?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a lab guy. As I said, I spend my time with cell lines and, you know, looking down the microscope. I don't, you know, think about the clinical presentation as much as perhaps I should. But
right.
I mean, Google is the same for everybody. It's something you can do in privacy, you know, before you have to go out and talk to real people about stuff. So
I'm really hung up because I try to tell people, because you can go down a rabbit hole and you are informed on so many levels, and you went online. So had you, because I don't know if people, how much time they go before they realize they have a lump. I mean, it's not always associated with pain. As you mentioned, sometimes it would hurt and sometimes it wouldn't.
Yeah.
It's always better to err on the side of caution. If you notice something different, it's better to ask your doctor.
I agree. I mean, that's what I should have done. You know, and when I did, then things happened very quickly, but I agree. If you find something that's unusual, something that you haven't been aware of in your own body, go have it checked out. And, you know, if it's a false alarm, you know, that's good news.
Yeah, that's the thing is, and I'm not, by the way, Dr. Bogler, I'm not trying to shame you.
Anyway. Oh, no, don't worry. I own this one.
Well, because I think a lot of people have that, and they also have, I'd rather not know. Do you come across patients but people that you've met before?
Sure.
Who just figure, well, if it was really something, you know, severe, I'd know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's what you tell yourself. You think, you know, it can't be, can't really be that. And, you know, if I just let it go away, or if I ignore it for a bit, it'll go away. I think, you know, the human mind has a powerful denial mechanism. So my recommendation, you know, which I didn't take myself, is have, you know, people should go check these things out.
Now, is this something that you found? Is this a genetic type of breast cancer? Is it, because I see in this article that that men can also inherit the BRCA1 genetic mutations, 1 and 2 genetic mutations.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, BRCA2 is actually more common in men, but no, in my case, it wasn't. I was tested, which is done typically or routinely for men because it is a rare disease, but it didn't turn out to be that in my case. And it's only about, you know, 10%, maybe a little bit more of male breast cancers that are hereditary through the BRCA genes. There may be other genes that we don't know about yet, but the ones we do, it's still really a minority. So the majority are still sporadic.
So tell us a little bit about entering the world of pink, as it's mentioned in this article, because as I was talking before I brought you on the air, I became very involved in, you know, 1999 was really the year that I started talking about Save the Boobies. You know, there's all these walks were happening, and I said, you should call it like Fit for Tit and Jogging for Jugs and Hauling it for Hooters, because there was kind of this powerful womanhood that was emerging as, you know, this is something that strikes 1 in 7 women. What is it like when you are in such the minority of a powerful movement?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting experience. I mean, you know, I would say first and foremost that I, you know, admire and respect and I'm deeply grateful for, you know, the pink movement, for want of a better term. I mean, I think we have to realize that in the 60s and 70s, there was a huge stigma around all kinds of cancers, and it was really some very courageous women with breast cancer who first came out and started talking about this in public and started raising awareness and started making it acceptable for people to talk about it, and also raising funds and, you know, getting the National Institutes of Health to fund research. And all these things have been transformative to how the cancer conversations happens in the U.S. You know, one of the sort of byproducts is that breast cancer has been identified very strongly as a women's disease. And so,
right,
you know, here I am now, this is a tough thing, a middle-aged white guy complaining about not being included. But yeah, I mean, men sort of get pushed aside and a little bit. And, you know, I don't mind the sort of, you know, going to the clinic and filling out a form that asks me whether I'm pregnant or when my last period was. I get it. You know, most of the people who fill that form out are women, and I don't mind. Where I do have some concerns is that when you look at access to clinical trials or you look at the research, male breast cancer is not studied as intensively as it could be, and men only have access to about 1 in 3 breast cancer clinical trials. Now, in some cases, it makes sense, but in other cases, I think it's just a case of the doctors think of women, and maybe they used the, you know, the same template for the trial last year that they write for the trial this year. And as such, there are opportunities to get access to some really, you know, important new drugs or to be part of studies and to understand our disease a little bit more that aren't realized. I mean, you know, most male breast cancer is hormone driven. You know, I'm taking tamoxifen like a lot of my female, you know, co-cancer patients. And it's the hormone disease, right? So let's
right.
study the male hormone. It's a little different. The makeup is a little different. So I think those are chances that could still be realized.
And because men are unlikely to think that this can even happen to them, how likely is it to be caught early enough to treat?
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, men tend to present later. They tend to present maybe 8 or 10 years later. So in the mid-70s is the median age versus the mid-60s. And then it also tends to present at a later stage. So there is a thought that if men were more aware, they might catch it earlier. I mean, there's never going to be, and there shouldn't be like a mammogram screening program for men. That would be ridiculous because it is too rare. But awareness and sort of, you know, self-examinations and just thinking about it might help. So that is an issue.
Well, and I would think because there is such a small percentage of men who are diagnosed with it, and it makes it no less deadly and no less imperative that they seek some medical attention. But I'm guessing there are also men who go see a doctor, and the doctor probably will occasionally think, well, you know, the chances are slim.
That's true. I mean, I've heard anecdotally from, you know, men that I've now met through the internet that's exactly what happened to them. It took them a while before they were able to persuade their sort of primary care doctor to take this seriously. And send them for a biopsy to get it checked out.
Because I've talked to one woman, a friend of the show named Kathy Owen, who had told her doctor that she felt this lump, and the doctor told her he wasn't impressed with the lump. And, you know, after several times of pressing her doctor, was eventually diagnosed with breast cancer. We've lost her since last February. We lost Kathy Owen. And but she had battled for over 4 years and went into regression. But I think it's important for people to hear that your doctor, we go to doctors as though they are the last word on something. And sometimes, you know, they only have what knowledge is available at that moment.
I agree, Patty. And, you know, they see their practice also through their own sort of experience. And when they see something really rare, it doesn't fit, you know, a pattern that they're used to identifying. So I agree. I've heard anecdotally of you know, young women who are told, you're too young to have breast cancer. And, you know, it takes them years sometimes, and those years are missed opportunities. So I agree. If you feel something that's, you know, changed in your body, you're the expert on your body. So, you know, if the first doctor doesn't take it seriously, keep going until you find someone who will.
And what would you recommend for men? I mean, do you recommend now a regular breast self-exam?
Yeah, I think just being aware, you know, be aware of your breasts. And yeah, I mean, you know, don't drive yourself nuts, but do feel, you know, maybe once a month or once every 3 months in the shower, particularly if you're, you know, a little older. Just look for something that's not been there before. And if you feel something, you know, go see your doctor.
You know, Dr. Bogler, you said something back there a second ago that really tries to hit home with some of us. When your doctor doesn't take it seriously to go find another doctor that might, it's so hard to know what that line is, because some doctors will very convincingly tell you that you have nothing to worry about. The odds of you having this are so small that you should just write it off as even a possibility. And a lot of us probably do take that one opinion and accept it. So what do you think is a good way to train us to better question a professional like that?
Build our will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, especially because, you know, if you hear good news, you know, then there's a real incentive to take it. I don't know if I have a really good advice on that. I mean, I would say your instincts. And you know, I would ask the doctor if he says, you know, absolutely you don't have this, and ask the doctor, well, what do I have? What is it then? And how can I tell that it's, you know, that it isn't going to be turn into something bad? I mean, ultimately, a lump is a really hard thing to diagnose. I mean, at least send someone for a mammogram. And if the mammogram looks suspicious, do a biopsy. I mean, a mammogram is not a big deal these days in most parts of the United States. There are some very rural, underserved areas. But if I had a lump in my breast now, I would go for a mammogram as soon as possible.
And you also did not opt for a lumpectomy. You wanted to have a mastectomy on the breast that was affected.
Yeah, I didn't really have much choice. I mean, you know, men have less breast tissue, and at this time that I was diagnosed, we thought it was stage 2. It turned out I was actually stage 3, but there was really no option. They were going to do, you know, remove all the tissue. They found some additional nodes than my surgeon did during the surgery, which is why I got the quote, upgrade.
Wow. Now, Dr. Bogler, how has this affected the way you've approached your own research when it comes to cancer cells?
Yeah, so actually, I took on some other responsibilities where I work, so I'm no longer active in the lab.
Okay.
But it's really changed sort of also how I want to spend my time. So I've written a lot online about my journey at my blog, malebreastcancerblog.org, and I now write about the current research that's going on, and you know, I try and advocate for men. And also engage in the conversation around what can we do to understand the disease better.
What kind of resources can you recommend to men that are just kind of wondering about their own breast health?
Well, there's, you know, the American Cancer Society, for example, has a really good page on male breast cancer. It really gives you all the facts and, you know, what to look for and what to expect in terms of treatments and all these things. A lot of, you know, academic cancer centers have similar pages. And then the social media, you know, there's a lot out there. If you Google, you'll find a lot of communities of men who are talking about it. There are some documentaries being made and some stories. So there's a lot of stuff out there now. It's a lot better than it was 3 or 4 years ago, I think.
You mean you didn't want to stay in the research labs and learn more about cisplatin? Wait, I know how to say this because my dad used it when he had a small cell cisplatin, which is isn't that a type of chemo?
It is, yes. Yeah, cisplatin is not typically used for breast cancer.
No, it's used for lung cancer, I will say that.
Yeah, that's correct. yeah, I mean, the chemo I had was, I had Taxol and then a cocktail called FAC, which is 5-FU Adriamycin and cyclophosphamide. But, you know, different hospitals do slight variations on those things. Yeah, you'll find all that at the pages of the American Cancer Society, for example.
Well, my producer, Craig, printed out some of your information. I was like, I can't pronounce most of these words. but I thank you so much for your time. And again, everyone can go to malebreastcancercoalition.org. And is that a good place to find some of your blogs, or do you have another location for those?
Yeah, that's a great sort of coalition page that's been come together showcases a lot of stories and people's stories. I write myself at malebreastcancerblog.org, and I tweet at O Bogler.
O Bogler. Go find O Bogler on Twitter right now. Dr. Bogler, we appreciate your time, and I'm so glad you're sharing your story. You've helped somebody tonight, and that's the most important thing. We appreciate that.
And, well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. I really love what you do on your show.
Oh, well, thank you, and we look forward to talking to you again. Whenever you have something you want to promote, don't hesitate to reach out to us.
Okay, will do.
Wonderful. Have a great night. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. More after this on 720 WGN.